Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, are you a dreamer? What are your dreams telling you? And how can our dreams help us? That's important. You know, our dreams are not just dreams. They actually play a deep role in our lives if we learn to work with them properly. And I know it's kind of complicated because our dreams feel so strange often, the stories and how to interpret them. But there are experts out there who are wonderful dream workers. I don't know what to call them. We'll ask the author of the book, The Transformational Power of Dreaming, Discovering the Wishes of the Soul, Tom Werner. Tom, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Peter. I'm happy to be here.
This is amazing stuff. You and your co-author, Stephen Larson, have put together a very powerful book that tells us so much about our dream life. And not in a way that people expect, because I think historically people just try to tell us what our dreams are supposed to mean, or, you know, what the archetypes always stand for. And if you dream this or that, then it means this or that. And I think you take it deeper, don't you?
Well, I guess we're kind of suspicious of theories of dreams that say this means that and that means this, and things have a meaning ahead of time. Carl Jung, who's probably my most important teacher as far as dreams go, once said to Freud, who, you know, often knew what dreams meant without having to talk to the dreamer, Jung liked to say, "I don't interpret dreams, I interpret dreamers."
Because I love that.
What, you know, say like a pen or a pencil or something, Freud knew what that meant. You know, it was some phallic symbol of sexuality or power or something. And he didn't have to talk to the dreamer. But wonder if that dreamer was a writer. Wonder if that dreamer was illiterate. Wonder if that dreamer had his eye poked out, perhaps accidentally, by his younger brother with a pencil when he was 8 years. They're very different pencils to those three dreamers, Jung would say. You know?
Right, and Freud was a reductionist.
Very much so. I mean, He was a genius, and he was brilliant, and, you know, we owe so much to him. This is not about knocking Freud. It's just about saying we're not reductionists in that sense.
Right. And what you open up in this book is very powerful because you really cover a lot of territory about dream work and how to know ourselves better through connecting to our dreams in. And you even say that it's not about writing words, you know, writing prose about dreams. It's more about writing poetry about dreams. It's, in other words, the dream itself has to be honored in its symbolic nature.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we say in the book is perhaps a guiding principle might be to work with dreams in as dream-like a way as possible. So you mentioned poetry, and in many ways, a dream often has the feeling of a poem. Actually, Freud once said, "Wherever I go in search of the psyche, I find a poet has been there before me." that poets I think poetry, like great art, like great even scientific theories, come from that deep place inside of us from which dreams come. So in our ways of working with dreams, one of the things we might do is have a dreamer write poetry from their dreams, using the images of their dreams. And I think to use the word you used just now, I think that honors the dream in its own language.
And I think that's very important to understand that the language of a dream has a great purpose, because it's not the language of our normal mind, which is so literal.
Yeah.
And so the dream gives us an opportunity to think symbolically and to know ourselves, because I think our dreams, and you of course you're a psychotherapist and you work deeply with people on how their dreams expose them to themselves in ways that they learn better who they are. And I love that. And when I look back at so many of my dreams, I don't keep records. I really should. But I have good memories. And I see the themes of my dreams. And they really tell me who I am and what I want, what my desires are, who I believe I am in a less literal context.
Yeah, this is something that is often found to be a strange idea to our materialist kind of literal way of going about things, but there does seem to be some part of us that seems to know more about us than we know about ourselves. Or one of the things I love about Jung's way of thinking about dreams is it doesn't just tell us, as Freud would say, where we're coming from, but he really had an understanding of dreams that they can guide us to where we're going. He once said that if an acorn had a dream, it would be of an oak tree, and that dreams can guide us to become who we were born to be. Jung once said, he gave the best definition, I think, of neurosis. He once said, neurosis is living someone else's story. And I think dreams help us live our story.
Right. And what shows up in our dreams so much tells us what our story is in symbolic ways. And it's interesting that I did a radio show not long ago about who shows up in our dreams.
Uh-huh.
And how we dream is family dreaming, that we dream about the important people in our lives, or who end up being important because they're in our dreams.
Yeah.
And we find out about who they are that way. And
I think
a
really shocking sort of moment in my education about dreams was, and this comes both from the Gestalt therapists, like Fritz Perls and others who I learned about dreams from, and Jung as well, is he said that we can look at dreams in roughly two different ways. We can look at them objectively, or we can look at them subjectively. And say I have a dream that Peter Roth is in, and it could be about my relationship with you in the external world, or it could be about some part of myself that I've chosen for whatever reason, and that would be really interesting to then pursue, that is wearing your mask. And I just think it cracks dreams open, because as you said in your very opening statement, dreams seem so strange. And they do. My dreams, and I've been working with dreams for over 40 years, they still seem so strange to me. But oftentimes, I can get a strong sense of what the dream might be saying to me if I look at every person and every part of the dream as a part of myself. And
right, and I was thinking of you using me as a metaphor for you wanting to be able to get the word out, to express yourself in the world of who you are and what your work is about, what your purpose is.
And that could be part of myself right now. You know, if I did have a dream of Peter Roth, it might be that part of me that I'm a little bit shy, actually. And so that might be the part of me that's emerging that needs to get the word out, like you said. That's beautiful.
Right.
I love that.
Oh, good. Thank you. So, what I'm really appreciating is to understand, and you brought it up, that there's a part of us that knows more than our minds know. And it's our unconscious. But how amazing our unconscious is to be able to invent these incredible, detailed, rich dreams that go on and on with all kinds of amazing events and people that flow in ways that, in the end, they tell us something about our lives, ourselves, and life itself. And who's doing that, you know?
Who's doing that? I'm very fortunate that I have I'm married to a woman who happens to be a visual artist and a painter and loves her dreams also, and we tell each other our dreams in the morning. And I can often say, how do we think this stuff up? Where does this come from? You know, it's just Joseph Campbell, the great student of mythology that Stephen, my co-author, was, you know, probably his greatest student. Joe used to say, even the most seemingly dull, unassuming, boring person, when they fall asleep and begin to dream, they become these amazing creative artists. And that's so true, you know, that there is some part of us that is so creative and so imaginative. And it's one of my teachers, Ira Progoff, used to use the image that there's this deep underground stream of wisdom and images, and each night the bucket kind of gets dropped down into that stream, and we pull it up, and there's a dream, you know, or a poet dips down into that stream and pulls up a poem, or, the chemist who discovered that the benzene molecule was circular, you know, had a dream of a snake crawling across his laboratory floor, and it stopped and it curled itself into a circle and took its tail in his mouth. And he woke up in the middle of that dream and said, it's not a linear molecule, it's circular. And he wrote it down, and all of a sudden all the math made sense. You know? Where does that come from,
right?
That source of knowledge and wisdom and
right. Who knew
humor
better?
Too, is there
right.
Funny?
But I think we're connected to universal intelligence in ways that, you know, we work that way. And I think the more we can live a life of serendipity, of allowing these gifts to keep flowing through us without forcing them, without trying to be mental geniuses, we should be more dream geniuses.
Or we're kind of unbalanced in that way. You know, we're a little too far, it seems, on the literal, rational kind of way of going about things. And dreams can help us catch our balance that way, you know. I was just thinking, I don't know why he just popped into my mind, but I think maybe it was talking about my wife and talking about creativity and talking about artists and how they access their dreams. Robert Louis Stevenson woke up in the middle of the night with this very powerful dream, and he started telling his wife, and she wrote it down as he was telling it, and he fell back asleep. And that morning at breakfast, she said, Robert or Bob or whatever she called him, she said, do you remember the dream you had last night? And he said, no. And she began to read back to him about this doctor named Jekyll in the dream. And he had this dark part of him that came out and would oftentimes kill the very people that he had healed during the day. And it was this hidden or hide, as Stevenson later called him, part of himself. And he dreamt up the entire plot of Dr. Jekyll and the strange case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And it might have been lost if his wife hadn't written it down. So, like you said, what are the amazing things that all of us are dreaming every night and we don't recall them?
I think it's very important what you're saying for us all to learn to live in that world of an act of imagination that's beyond fantasy, or let's say the fantasy itself is very real, and that we can bring it into our lives better. We can allow ourselves to be who we need to be because of what our dreams are telling us.
Yeah, even if it, you know, even if you don't believe, say, that it has psychological guidance in it, or that we can really, you know, balance ourselves or make sure we're living our story from our dream, even if we just wrote them down and read them over, it just feeds our imagination and our creativity and parts of ourselves that we can use at work, or we can use in our relationships, or we can use, you know, even if we don't quote interpret them or work with them, even if we just record them, I think it feeds our imaginations, which are, you know, or it honors and feeds our imagination.
Right. And now, also, there are many dreams that have important information in the real world that are telepathic dreams, or, you know, or premonitions, or needing to communicate with other souls in ways that we can't do in our normal lives. And and people show up, and often people have warnings in dreams about future tragedies that might end up being true, or they might end up heading off and hitting themselves.
I mean, there's thousands, literally thousands, tens of thousands of examples at the American Psychical Research Center where they've recorded information of say, a mother waking up in the middle of the night and she's dreaming that her daughter's apartment is on fire, and she calls her and wakes her up, and the apartment is in fact on fire. And she gets out with her children, and, you know, the mom saved her daughter and grandchildren's lives. That is not an uncommon experience. It's really amazing. And what is it? So one of the ways I think about it is that whatever that state of consciousness that we're in the dream state, it's like a doorway into all kinds of powers and possibilities. And, I mean, one of the most powerful experiences of my life occurred in a dream where I was sound asleep on an island in British Columbia on the west coast of Canada, and I had a dream that took place in Litchfield, Connecticut, and I woke up and I wrote it down, and a few months later I was back on the east coast of the United States, and I happened to be with the person who was in my dream that took place, and it turns out what I dreamt was exactly what was happening at that moment in that woman's life. And I have no idea how to explain that. You could call it out-of-body travel or experience, or I don't know. It just, my only for real conclusion is there's more going on than meets the eye.
Right, and I think that's what this is a doorway to.
Yeah.
Is the opportunity of having, of owning a bigger life.
That's
through...
a beautiful way to say it, owning a bigger life, you know. And that's, I think dreams can, that's a great way to say it, Peter, that I think dreams invite us to live a bigger life. I don't think I could say it any better than that. I mean, it's so simple.
Well, it's,
so.
It, you know, it's really learning to live. I believe that I live as a multidimensional human. I mean, I work intuitively. I'm always tapping into information that I wouldn't know. You know, it turns out to be true, and I do it every day for people.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to understand that we all have this capacity to tap into this greater knowing, and for many of us it's just the dream is a doorway. But also, I think that most of us are living intuitively anyway. It's just that part of our mind that creates these dreams and knows more than we know is actually guiding us the whole time, and the more that
whether
we can tune into it,
whether we're conscious of it or not.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And the more we can tune into it, the more powerfully we can enjoy our lives.
Yeah. I think I'd like to just get one bit of information in there before we end, because I sense we may be ending fairly soon, is that my way of thinking about dreams is that there are lots of different kinds of dreams, you know, that some are just kind of ordinary, kind of housekeeping kind of dreams that might be reminding me about things I need to do or pay attention to. And at the other end of the spectrum are these great, what Jung called big dreams, you know, that are really a kind of a breakthrough of that archetypal world into our personal life. So that dreams can, and the other thing is that dreams, one dream can mean lots of different things simultaneously. That's part of the creativity of a dream. An example that's in the book is a woman going along a highway, and she gets off at an exit. And it's an exit. It goes down a hill to a T at the bottom, a traffic light, and she puts on her brakes, a very common kind of dream, puts on her brakes, and the brakes don't work. And she wakes up careening into this intersection. And in working with it, she tells me the dream, and the first thing I asked her, I said, have you had your brakes checked lately? And she kind of laughs, and she says, no, but I think they're fine. But I have to have my car inspected this week anyhow, and they'll check them. And so then we talked about that exit, and she started telling me about, I said, what is your associations with that exit where you lost control of your car? She said, oh, that's where I get off to go to John's house, who's a new man in her life for 3 or 4 months, And I said, how's that relationship going? And absolutely unconsciously, she says, well, it's going a little too fast, like often happens in my relationship, and it feels a little bit out of control, and I'm not quite sure, you know, how to slow it down or how to stop it for a moment. And she had no, I said, does it feel a lot like you felt in the dream? And then she laughed, and we started talking about that. But she also came back the next week, and a little sheepishly, and she said, you know, my brakes were completely shot. It was metal on metal. And so the dream was both talking about her physical world of her car as well as her relationship world that she needed to slow down. And it's just a brilliant kind of example how creative.
Right.
Simple.
And you have a whole chapter about big dreams, dreams that are really helping us in so many ways, and go deeper and deeper into other dimensions of life that are introduced to us in our dreams.
Yeah,
and
I think.
And is it your granddaughter who had that dream with her great grandmother about traveling out in her dreams with her great grandmother and
it was
and showing different things?
Yeah, a couple of months after my mom, her great grandmother died, and then. And she came to me, she was nine at the time, and she said, she calls me Biba, and she said, I had this dream, but it wasn't a dream, Biba, it wasn't a dream. And as she told me this dream, or this experience, or this vision, or whatever it was, she said two or three or four times, it wasn't a dream, it really happened. And she was, my mom, her great grandma came into her room and led her out of the room up into the sky, and she took her around, introduced her to my brother, who she had heard a lot about, who had died and had this marvelous experience in heaven, whatever.
Yeah, that's wonderful. We are getting to the end of the show, though. I'm so glad you could tell that story.
Yeah, and she came, and she brought her back into a room and tucked her in, and it's an experience, I think, that will be with her her whole life.
Of course. So let's talk about the book, The Transformational Power of Dreaming, and you're one of the two authors, Tom Verner. Is there a website? Is there some way that people can find out more?
We don't have a website yet. We're actually at work on a workbook to accompany it, and there will be a website, but just get the book, and the publisher has a great website, and they'll let you know if they decide to publish this workbook, which they're interested in, but haven't said yes yet.
And the publisher is Inner Traditions, and it's The Transformational Power of Dreaming. Tom Verner, thanks so much for being a guest on Energy Stew. I really love talking with you.
I love talking with you, Peter. I learned stuff during the interview, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And this is This is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.fm. I can be reached at Peter at Heart River, H-E-A-R-T, river.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.